It's time for Cal's Wine Chat with Callie. A couple of weeks ago, during our Italian tour, I threw down a challenge to wine producer Cal. I wanted to learn more about a region close to my personal family history, small archipelago nation south of Italy in the Mediterranean Ocean, the country of Malta, the country where my mother's parents are from. So I was very interested to see what was going on in Malta, just a little bit further south of Sicily, where we finished our wine tour of Italy. To dive into the history of Malta and talk about the wines that make today, I'm joined, as always, by Cal Lee. Cal, how are you today?
I'm good. Thanks for having me.
No, absolutely. Very happy to have you on. I've been very excited to talk about this one. Shame we couldn't jump into it straight after our Italian wine tour, but Radiothon had other plans for us. So
yeah. That dastardly Radiothon.
Dastardly Radiothon, my goodness. What good does it do? A lot, actually.
Yeah, a lot.
No, can't believe you would have been asked that, Cal. It's just a terrible thing to say.
Yeah, you're right. It is.
Does quite a lot. Does quite a lot for us. Shout out to our subscribers. So, can you give us a bit of an overview of the geography of Malta?
Yeah. Well, sort of as we mentioned at the top, it is an archipelago nation. But there's sort of two main islands. We're sort of talking about the island of Malta itself, and then sort of the smaller island of Gozo to the north. In terms of temperature and climate, they're pretty classically Mediterranean. Obviously, as we move further south from Italy towards the equator, the sort of temperature fluctuations tend to level out a little bit more. Daylight hours level out a bit more. But the big thing that I think is really important from a bit of cultural perspective is that Malta is very dry. It basically doesn't receive any rainfall at all for 4 months of the year, and a few months it does receive rainfall, it doesn't really get a lot. Which, when you're sort of talking about potentially irrigation-heavy crops like grapevines, is sort of like an important consideration there. The other thing is, obviously, it is an island, which means that the sort of you can't just find new area. It is sort of the expansions and waxing and wanings of area under vine of Malta have sort of been going on since about 800 BCE. And sort of as different people and different colonial powers have sort of moved in and taken control over the archipelago, we then see a lot of changes in sort of where they value grapes as a crop, meaning sort of how the area is actually being farmed.
I suppose, like most of Malta's history, especially their language as well, you can see there's a lot of influence from various Mediterranean powers. You've got a bit of Italian, a bit of Turkish, a bit of course, a bit of English from the late 20th century. So, what's the history of wine in Malta? Does it sort of follow the same type of theme?
Yeah, well, the way I sort of think about it is that there's sort of a few key power shifts that sort of change things. We know that sort of the Phoenicians first brought grape planting to Malta in somewhere around 800 BCE, but there's very little evidence of winemaking happening at that period of time. It's probably more likely that these were just being grown as table grapes, so basically as a food crop for the most part, and any sort of wine there would have been somewhat incidental. But you can then see when you sort of get the first Roman colonization happening, this is sort of where the Romans were Christian by this time, which means that having wine that was domestically produced was important to ceremony. You see this a lot of times with sort of Christian colonization of areas, is that they care a lot about having wine, a lot of feasts and all that. You know, it's an important cultural signifier of that whole thing. But sort of it really starts to kick off when the Knights of St. John move in 5030. Not a historian. I'm trying to remember the date for you. But that sort of is the start of where they start really seriously taking viticulture much more seriously. And the sort of what we could think of as an industry of wine, which is to say people specializing into wine production that is then like stored and sold and used throughout a year. That's when that sort of starts off there. Unfortunately, when the British come and colonize Malta, they don't see a lot of value in its viticultural industry, so a lot of that gets ripped up and replaced with large value cash crops, things like cotton mainly. But we can sort of see in the modern day Malta, especially once they sort of gain their independence, and sort of this sort of like late 60s, early 70s phase where they start taking a lot of cues from the Italian wine industry, because sort of geographically there's a lot of shared similarities there. And we sort of start to see the emergence of a more, how we sort of think of a more modern wine industry. They start bringing in international varietals. So like Cabernet Sauvignon and Chardonnay get quite widely planted there. And then they sort of tend to split into your pretty classic sort of styles of winemaking. You know, they're making dry red wines. They're making, you know, slightly sweet sparkling wines and that kind of thing. And that sort of trucks on into where we are today, which is to say the actual viticulture of Malta has been pretty stable since then. There's not a lot of space for expansion. And the industry is sort of seems to be balkanized around three or four major sort of cooperatives that basically buy grapes from all the farmers and then, you know, make these styles of wine.
And so, yeah, what are the major wineries in Malta today and what are they making mostly?
Yeah, so like I said, there's it's mainly these sort of like large cooperatives there. And then there's sort of even this kind of interesting stuff where you get guys like Antorini, which are like a large sort of Italian cooperative, are also sort of making inroads there. Because for quite a while they were importing grape juice just because the demand domestically was higher than the ability to produce there. But in terms of sort of, there's basically like three major sort of grower cooperatives there, and that is Delicata, Marsovin, and Camarelli. Oh, sorry, Camilleri. Definitely pronounced.
Do you mean
wrong.
Camilleri?
Camilleri, maybe. Yes. Yeah, sure.
Yes, because that's my grandfather's last name, funnily enough.
Oh, no way. Okay, yeah. Shout out. But yeah, and they're sort of the major sort of cooperatives. And like I said, like there's definitely a period where they were buying in a lot of grape product to try and meet domestic consumption. And this is sort of, with wine internationally, you sort of have, countries can usually split into net importers or net exporters. When it comes to wine, obviously places like France and Italy and Spain are net exporters of wine because they make so much of it and it's well regarded internationally and yada, yada, yada. But places like Malta are net importers, which is to say there is more wine consumed in Malta than they could make in a year. And what they do produce domestically is pretty much entirely consumed within the country. Maybe a little bit gets sent to Italy and stuff like that, but not many other places.
I suppose that brings to the next question then, where can I buy Maltese wine?
But yeah, I've actually been doing some digging on this. The answer is I don't know. There is a sort of like and a lot of countries have this where there's like a food tourism board for Malta that will happily ship you bottles of Maltese wine for an exorbitant amount of shipping costs. But, you know, that's sort of par for the course. And sort of the only thing I could find in Australia is that there was one person importing Maltese wine in Richmond, Victoria, and I haven't seen them do anything since 2015. So I've got a sneaking suspicion they might not be around anymore. But this is, I would also love to hear from any of our listeners. If any of you know about someone who is importing wine from Malta or just importing wine from any of these sort of like smaller, less prestigious countries, I would love to hear about it because I find that stuff really, really interesting, but it's sort of, it can be quite difficult to get access to it if you're not part of that cultural community already.
Yeah, I suppose the best way to, at the moment, other than digging around for a independent importer, is just to go to Malta, I guess, and get yourself a bottle of wine.
Easy. That's it. You know, yeah,
that's so easy. It's really easy.
Yeah, just go to Malta.
Brilliant. And, yeah. You know, great excuse to go there as well, I think. You know.
Yeah, exactly.
And so what are you drinking this week, Kyle?
I am drinking the Honeybee Semillon from Sabi Wabi. Peter Kotz, winemaker there, also assistant winemaker at MJ Becker Wines. This thing's just delicious. I don't have loads to say about it, but it's just sort of, it's this really rich, honeyed oat sort of style of Semillon that, we don't see out of the Hunter a lot, but I think it's really, really elegant and just like perfect for the kind of humid yet warm weather we're experiencing right now.
Lovely. A lovely weather pairing.
Mm.
Fantastic. Well, Cal, it's been a pleasure to talk to you again this morning. Hopefully see you again next week.
Yeah, for sure.
And do you have any events going on this week? Or
No, just had Peter down last night at Haifa. So, but there will be one coming up. There'll be a few events coming up in November, Urban Wine Walk as well. So keep your eyes peeled for that.
You don't really need an excuse to go to Hive Bar, really.
No, I know. You can just come down anytime.
Easy as that. And what can we expect in the next few weeks from Wine Chat?
Well, next week will probably be advanced phenolic chemistry as I try and madly cramp my exams coming up.
it'll just be a bit of a study aid for you, actually, to see how much you remember.
Yeah, exactly. And everyone here has already done like year three chemistry, so we'll be able to follow along really easily.
Yeah, honestly, everyone's got an in-depth understanding of chemical reactions and free radicals, et cetera.
Yeah, exactly. And then after that, I've got a few people I am trying to get down for an interview, so we'll see how that process
Lovely.
Sort of works.
Cool.
As I sort of finish my studies for the year and have a lot more free time to dedicate towards doing cool stuff.
Brilliant. Well, it's been, as I said, been a pleasure. I'll see you next week.
See you next week, Cam. Yeah.